Hi, I'm Marcus.
And I'm Nick.
And we are Working Class Nerds.
We're the podcast that gives you no information about your favorite information.
Today is Thursday, April 19th, 2018.
This is episode 10, double motherfucking digits.
All right, we made it. You can find our podcast on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Buzzsprout, and holy shit, now Stitcher.
Finally!
I got off my ass and did it.
It totally took you 10 episodes, but you finally applied to Stitcher.
Hey, better late than never. This week, we're going to talk about PAX East and what games we played there. Also, we're going to get down and dirty with Brian from the Bad Feeling Podcast and discuss our thoughts on the state of group content and our speculations on the next big expansion in Star Wars, The Old Republic. 6.0 is real. So, Brian, tell us what you've been up to this week.
Hey, fellas. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for coming. Welcome. Yeah.
So this week, the past couple weeks have been kind of weird for me. I've been doing a lot of SWTOR, of course, but it's been mostly solo because I've been like out of town at a big work convention in Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. And funnily enough, they have different laws there about what you can purchase and consume in Las Vegas versus Texas.
In Nevada? Yeah, a lot of things are legal in Nevada now, right?
Yeah, as it turns out, you can buy a bunch of like, so I'll lay this out. I'm kind of a lightweight. And when it comes to like recreational drug use, I'm not, you know, I pretty much play the numbers, stick to what's legal here. But when in Rome, me and Chuck made our way to the ye ol' dispensary on the corner.
Of course.
And it being Vegas, you know, absolutely. We're going out to the tiki bar. We're hanging out, you know, late nights, whatever. And sure. I think it was like a Monday night or a Tuesday night at probably 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I've got, you know, gummy power all up.
Oh, boy. So, all right. So how much gummy power are we talking? Like 100 milligrams, 20, 10? Do you remember or not even?
No.
That's great.
That's awesome.
We'll say I'm plus 4 gummy power at this point. And it's 2 a.m. So I fire up the laptop. You know what would be awesome right now? SWTOR would be freaking amazing. So sure. Me out of my gourd, high as shit, trying to play the KOTFI expansion, and all I'm doing is like staring at the textures like, man, Koth's jacket is fucking cool, like holy shit.
Look at all the colors and stuff.
Look at all the textures on that. It looks like leather and it's all cracked and shit, like holy fuck, man. Like just that's zoning awesome. In on textures, not actually playing the game, but just like watching the cutscenes over and over again.
That's awesome.
Great.
So after I came back home, I've also just been doing more kind of solo stuff. So I've got a couple tunes that I've been leveling up, trying to get more Galactic Command, trying to see things that I haven't seen before. But I've been doing kind of slow single player stuff. So Fallen Empire stuff, doing some class leveling, seeing some class story, planetary story, just a bunch of stuff that I've, even though I've been playing this game for freaking ever, there's a lot that I still haven't done. So I've just been trying to make my way through the library there.
Sure. Have you done the bounty hunter story or a non-force user through KOTFI and KOTET?
Yeah, that was actually my first, my main like story tune is a bounty hunter. And
okay.
Yeah, that was the first one I took through Fallen Empire and KOTET. And
was
yeah,
it hot?
They do shoehorn in some story points. Like all of a sudden you can use the force. Like that's cool. Like I was not expecting that.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm assuming this story is like really force heavy.
Yes.
It's like all
well, it was
force.
An expansion they released in 2015 and 16.
Uh-huh.
And it was a solo only. And it was kind of like everybody in the game plays this one story. So it was the class specifics were gone.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see.
So yeah. Go ahead.
So, and they really just try to shoehorn in story elements that may or may not fit with what's gone on with your character beforehand. You know,
right.
It's a very long form RPG. So you've gotten used to your character using blasters and flamethrowers and stuff. And then all of a sudden there's a plot point where your character has to use the force. And they really just shoehorn that in there. Not well, as elegant as you'd like.
No. And I haven't done it. I play a Marauder. So, I have not done it. Everything, the two or three tunes that I've gone through them have all been Force users, because kind of just feels weird for me to do that. So that's why I always ask. What are you leveling now?
Leveling right now, I've got a Juggernaut that's the one that I'm taking through Kotfi right now. So, and I have never seen that story, the Sith Warrior story at that point. So it's fun to, you know, I'm the Emperor's Wrath and blah, 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 blah. So there's some interesting flavor dialogue there. But then on the pub side, I'm doing a Smuggler, which I've never done before. And that's again, a non-Force user, but I like the playstyle so much of the Funslinger that I'm doing everything with that tune. All the side quests, all the bonus missions, all the flashpoints, all the story quests. I'm consuming it all on the pub side on this character, because I don't have a lot of pub tunes. So
right.
So I've been doing a lot of that stuff.
Would you say that, you know, are you leveling and doing all that stuff mainly because you're sick of group content, or because you just want to see what the game has to offer?
Some of both. I wouldn't say I'm sick of group content, because that's still my main focus. You know, I still like being able to, you know, be a part of a team. And the better I do as myself as an individual, the better the team does. So if I'm a shitty DPS, then we're probably going to wipe. So I need to, you know, I need to get my act together. So that's still kind of my main focus is group PvE. But yeah, there's so much stuff that I haven't seen. And there's so much stuff in the game because it's just so vast that, you know, I still haven't played the Consular or the Smuggler storylines. I still haven't seen the Republic side planetary quests for half the planets. I still never did the Mekeb expansion on the pub side. Still haven't done all this stuff that's been around for years. So I'm finally just getting to explore the whole catalog that's out there.
And it must feel like a brand new game. You must feel invigorated.
Yeah, it's pretty rad, you know, and that's why I'm doing all the things, you know, not just running through class story or not just, you know, picking and choosing one or two things. I'm doing all the stuff on this one Smuggler. So it's like you just said, it's stuff that I've never seen before. And of course, because I'm an achievement whore, I'm taking the time to, okay, also kill 500 fucking Wampas or whatever is out there along the way. So it is definitely reinvigorating, because it feels like a new game, you know.
Yes.
I've run those flashpoints and those ops enough times that, you know, I know them backwards and forwards and which ones I like to do, but seeing new stuff is always exciting. So I'm glad that it's big enough that I've been playing so long, there's something new for me to do.
Right. I find that for myself that I don't get to play a ton. So the few hours a night that I get to play during the week, I'm playing ops and ops and ops and ops. And it's almost, I don't want to say it's too much, because it's not too much. It's just, I don't have the time to level another tune. I started a bounty hunter and I've been working on him for a year, and I think he's still only level. Actually, I did the master's companion or whatever to instant 70.
Sure.
Just to see if going through just the class story, what command rank I would be in the end.
Okay.
Now, command rank, Nick, is so...
Thanks.
Yeah.
Marcus read my blanks there.
Yeah, so you hit level 70, which is max level.
Yeah.
Then you got to start the fuck over to get to level 300. It's the stupidest fucking thing in the world.
That's like your command
level? Yeah, and
it's goddamn brutal. Because, you know, your normal XP curve, you're learning new abilities, and, you know, you feel your character getting more powerful and doing, you know, regular RPG level up stuff.
Okay,
But once you get to max level, you have to start over, and that's where your gear progression begins. So you're not learning any new abilities. You're not getting anything really tangible, but every level you get a box of dicks, and then you turn that box of dicks into more dicks, and hopefully you get a better piece of armor out of that box. 9 times out of 10, it's garbage, and you just have to hope that the next time you get a box, it's not garbage.
Just imagine leveling up one of your tunes and Rainbow Six, and you get to max level, and then you have to start over to get the better gear.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. It's like, it's all like the end game. It just becomes about getting the better gear, and it takes a lot more grinding to get that done.
For sure,
it's definitely a long grind, and I understand the reasoning behind it is because every character, every player in the game can achieve max level gear without having to do the most difficult content in the game. Where it used to be gated behind know, if you can't complete the most difficult content in the game, you can't get the best gear in the game. But
right.
So they open up gear for everybody, but it's freaking brutal, man. It is just a grind.
Sure. Yeah, I can get that for sure. So Marcus, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, this week has been epic as fuck. Well, we took Isaacsa down again. That's the new Gods from Machine boss.
Yep.
Death Star Troopers is my ops team. I talk about all the time Sunday nights, and we've been having a lot of fun. I feel like the team's really coming together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another team that I'm involved with, and you know, I learned from these guys, and these guys show up every single week, week after week, and it's great. And the commitment from some of these guys, and Brian mentioned it earlier, is, you know, if his DPS is shitty or my DPS is shitty, you know, the whole team fails. But the biggest thing is people don't understand is it takes fucking 8 people to take care of this, or 16 people, one or the other. But for me, the team is really coming together and I love it. The other big news is my Death Star workshop, code name, is fully operational. It was so great. I sprayed my first cabinet in there this week or last week. I've been putting in crazy hours. I've got a backlog of tables to make, so work has just been fucking insane. But on the flip side, I'm leaving tomorrow. Today's my virtual Friday, so Nick and I are enjoying a few frosty beverages tonight because I don't have to work tomorrow.
And nice. I do, but not till 11, so it's not a huge deal.
The other thing, I started playing Final Fantasy 14. Not a lot, just enough. So I have it on the PC, and I'm just trying it out because Star Wars The Old Republic is my first MMO. So I wanted to try something else and see what else is out there. So I have it on the PC. I ordered it for the PlayStation because your account is connected. And I want to see what it's like to play an MMO with a controller. I'm more of a keyboard and mouse guy, but I'm really intrigued to see how intuitive an MMO can be
on a controller.
Yeah.
See, we touched on this a couple episodes ago, but I'm interested to see how having multiple abilities gets translated over to the controller. Because at least I know in SOTOR, just from watching you play, that when you're playing as your Marauder, you have like, I don't know, probably 10 abilities like all the way across your number pad, and maybe some on the F, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever keys also. So I don't know what the control scheme actually is, but it's a lot of keys and it's a lot more, you know, commands than there are buttons on a controller.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Final Fantasy 14 has something similar to that, to where that might be an issue. But I'm just curious to find out that'll be like.
I think I'm level 10, so I you know, pretty much it's 3 buttons. And that's pretty much
jump, attack, interact with items.
Well, no, I think there's 3 different attacks.
Oh, okay.
And then some kind of buff that makes your attacks 25% stronger. But I'm still a pussy in the game, so
right.
It doesn't really matter.
So is it like punch high, punch low, kick
exactly.
In the nuts?
Yeah, exactly. It's like Johnny Cage in Mortal Kombat. You know, he has 3 attacks.
Right. Hadouken.
You broke it.
Exactly. Also, I downloaded Fortnite. So,
I did too.
Yeah. And
that's a comedy show.
It is a comedy show. So all these people are playing this Fortnite game. And a friend of mine says, do you play Fortnite? And I didn't even know what the fuck it is. Brian, do you know what Fortnite is?
I know what it is. Yeah.
All right. So
I would never expose anybody to my playing of Fortnite, but I know what it is.
All right. So
Marcus and I either. We are fucking awful.
Well, I never did it before. I never played a game like that or PUBG before. So we played it. So you land on this giant fucking map, and all of a sudden they say, you can build whatever you want. So I start building some stairs, and now I'm standing in the middle of this map on a bunch of stairs that I built, and all of a sudden this storm is, like, shrinking the map, and I die. And I'm like, well, this is fucking stupid. So then the next match, I actually found some people, but they're so good that I just died.
Instantly.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, all right, good night. I'm over it. But other than that, it's been a lot of Star Wars, a lot of work. Little bit of Final Fantasy and one night of Fortnite. Nick, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been playing a whole lot of The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. I know I'm like a year late to that party, but as I mentioned last episode, I just got a Switch. Shout out to Mariana again. That was awesome. And when Marcus and I went on our stupid little t-shirt adventure last week, or last episode, I should say,
I did buy Breath of the Wild while we were out at the mall. It's really cool. It's a lot different than any of the other Zelda games I've played. The last one I played was Twilight Princess, so I skipped one there, the one for the Wii exclusively. It's a huge sandbox game. You can interact with whatever you want. I suck at it because it's not nearly as linear as the previous games, which I thought, you know, it might be. So I keep just stumbling into enemies that are way, way stronger than me. a new mechanic to this Zelda game is the weapons break. So you can, like, the low-level weapons break really quickly. So
what do you mean they break? Wait. So, like, we're talking like Fallout, where if you use the bat three times, it
shatters.
Yes.
Yeah, but in Fallout, you can repair the weapons. In this, you can't. They just break forever. They're gone. So, like, the first couple things are, like, sticks, and it's like, oh, bigger fucking stick. You know, there's 2 damage and 3 damage. And, like, so those break really fast, and then you find a rusty sword, and that breaks after, like, 5 hits. But
did
so
you find a rusty trombone?
No. I did. I did find one, but I steered clear. I knew I was under level to conquer the rusty trombone. So, you know, it makes you like be more strategic with what enemies you're fighting and stuff like that. And it's cool. And then there's dungeons and, you know, the main story, you got to save Zelda from Ganon and blah, blah, blah. It's really cool. I'm only probably like 10 hours in, but I'll definitely report back with more of that. In non-video game news, we don't really talk about this too much, but I'm super big into craft beer, and this week I've been really into trading beers. I've been wheeling and dealing quite a bit, which is always exciting. To anyone who's into craft beer specifically, I was able to get a fair number of very hazy cans from Treehouse this week, which was great. And I also traded for an affogato, which was kind of like my big white whale or big white buffalo of beers. I haven't been able to trade for one, and I finally did this week, which is pretty cool.
How do you trade beers? Is that like
it's a thing? Yeah. Trust me, that's what I said. It's a thing.
Yeah, is it like a craft beer swap meet? Like, what is it?
Well, there's like Facebook groups and stuff, and there's no money exchange. It's just beer for beer. You know what I mean? So it's, okay. there's no like, you know, you can't get in trouble for like selling it or anything like that. It's just trading product for product, sort of like bartering, I guess.
That's cool.
Yeah, but it's usually just like the rare stuff, it's like the super rare beers that you can only get at like a certain brewery. Like a lot of the Treehouse stuff, you can only get at Treehouse. Same thing with Trillium. Or there's other big. Those are the two big ones near me. But there's these big, super popular craft breweries that you can only get their beer there. Then they'll have special releases, and those, you know, of course, get have higher trade value. So like that Affogato is a crazy stout from Trillium up in Boston that they don't make very often. Maybe once every 6 months at the most. And it, you know, it's probably like $20 a bottle retail. So, you know, you have to trade a lot to match that value because it's rare. It's really good. And it's, you know, expensive if you actually do manage to buy it straight from the brewery. So you have to trade a lot to get to it. So it's hard to find because, you know, people want to. Yeah,
it's a thing.
It's fun.
That's rad. Because I've been after a couple beers out of Florida that just don't have distribution. So every once in a while I check my little pubs. But no, Miami Vice. That shit's delicious.
Yeah.
I've never drank it.
Florida has a lot of good beers. I think Cigar City is also in Florida somewhere.
Yeah, the High Life is what I was drinking when I was in Disney.
That sounds good.
It was delicious.
We've got a ton of little mom and pop craft breweries around Central Texas. Like you could take a tour and make a whole week out of it. There's a bunch around here.
Yeah. Well, same thing up here. It's, you know, Vermont, Maine, and Massachusetts, Connecticut even. You know, the craft beer game has really changed the industry.
Yeah, it's insane.
That's why Budweiser's paying billions of dollars for breweries.
Yeah, they're just buying up all the ones that get popular. I know they've made the rumors are they made Treehouse several offers, but I could do a whole episode or I could do a whole podcast on just craft beer. Stay tuned for details.
Yeah, well, I just drink it and it tastes good. And I get hammered. My wife gets mad at me.
Mission accomplished.
Exactly. So, I don't know, Brian, have you ever been to a PAX before?
Yeah, there's a PAX South here in January in San Antonio. And I went once a couple years ago. That's the only actual PAX. They have conventions here in Austin a couple times a year. You know, like Wizard World will come, and there's a couple others here.
Yeah, South by SWTOR, right?
Yep, South by SWTOR. There's a South by Southwest Gaming Convention as well, which is like a mini PAX.
Sure.
That's cool.
But yeah, yes, so our event that we hosted, we called South by SWTOR. Gonna do it next year.
It's funny, Zen, I heard on your podcast that Zen, you know, donated around to the whole thing for you guys. Well, when my wife and I went to New York City this year, Zen is in our guild, and I actually met him.
Oh, man.
And he's an awesome dude.
Neat. I bet he is. I've talked to him on Twitter. He's a neat dude.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy. He's Australian, and he's a healer. So, you know.
Props to him.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we just went to PAX East, and it was Nick's first gaming convention, and I've been a bunch, but since 2014, I haven't been because I was getting married and then bought a house and then had a kid and
the whole nine,
and then started a business. And needless to say, I've been a little fucking busy, but this time we went and it's in Boston, man. It was a great time.
Yeah, it was epic. I loved it. It was really kind of how I expected. It was so overwhelming. We walked in the expo hall, it's packed with people and there's just booths everywhere. The only thing I knew how to compare it to was New England's version of the county fair. We have the Big E up here. I'm sure county fairs are similar in other parts of the country, but where it was like a county fair or the Big E, where every single booth is video games, and most of them were indie games that you could just walk up to and play. It was crazy.
It was great. I mean, I went there to play indie games because, you know, the AAA games, the lines are insane,
right?
And I didn't even know what some of them were.
You could play PUBG like against other people, but it'd be like a 2-hour wait. So it's not, I mean, Marcus and I suck because we've never played. Same thing with Fortnite. You could try out Fortnite on these crazy gaming laptops. Same thing with PUBG, but you'd be waiting 2 hours or something like that. And it's not really worth it for Marcus and I. So we hit up as many indie games as we could, and we can talk about them.
Yeah, for sure. We'll get into that in a little bit. But the biggest thing for me about PAX was everybody's so fucking happy.
Yeah.
There wasn't any angry people.
Zero.
That's beautiful.
And in New England, that's really a rarity.
Yeah. Most right? of the times when there's that many people in one spot, they're all grumpy. Like if you bump into somebody, you get a dirty look or whatever. I was like stumbling all over the place, not because I was drunk or something, but because I was just not paying attention because I was staring at all the, you know, the booths like a ADHD little kid I am. And
as we all are.
Yeah, just absentmindedly walking around. And, you know, everyone was like super nice about it. I'm like, oh, sorry, whatever. Everyone has backpacks on. So, you know, it's inevitable that you're going to bump somebody with your backpack and vice versa. But there's just everyone was super happy, super cordial. And all the staff at all the booths were like really happy that you were at all interested in their games, which is really cool, too.
Well, the next time we go next year, I definitely think we need to go 2 days.
I would agree.
Because I felt almost like, I don't want to say rushed, but I feel like there's not enough time to even see everything.
Right.
In the expo hall, let alone go to a panel or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree.
So, want to take a leak?
Yeah. Let's talk about these games, and then we'll take a break.
All right. Sounds good.
Perfect.
Nick, what's the first game we saw at PAX?
The first game we came across was a little indie game by the name of Genesis Noir by Surprise Attack Games. We had a chance to meet the producer, Jeremy Abel. He's an awesome guy, and the game was incredible. The number one thing we took away from it was the really trippy graphics. They were really, really overwhelming, but very artistically pleasing, aesthetically pleasing, I should say. It was just a really
interesting game.
Yeah, just a great visual experience top to bottom through the whole demo. But the actual gameplay is sort of a point-and-click puzzle. It's a 2D side-scrolling with you have to click on certain objects to get them to do things. But the main plot is it's a noir game about a murder mystery where you're sort of solving your own murder. The actual plot of what the characters are is a little confusing, but really interesting. The main characters are sort of these celestial beings. And one of them, or you, get murdered with a gun. And that gun going off in that murder is actually what causes the Big Bang, which creates the universe. So I know that sounds confusing, but the game is a lot more simple than that subplot sort of
wait a entails. Minute. It was not simple at all. I mean, you start off and there was a clock and a room and a phone and all this stuff, and you just start clicking on stuff, knocking stuff over, and then you click on this, and it shows a bunch of numbers.
And you find the phone number. Yeah, you find a phone number.
Yeah, and it's just...
It's like your ex-girlfriend's phone number, and you call her up, and then you get hammered, and you have, like, a flask in your pocket. And the whole thing is just these really ridiculous graphics. Well, or artwork, I should say.
It was an interesting game, for sure. We got through the demo. I'd like to see how it turns out.
In a full game.
In a full game, because, you know, right now it was... I feel like in games now you need a little bit more direction.
Yeah.
It was very hands-free, like
figure let it you out
yourself. Figure it out yourself, and there's a few parts that I was just like, okay, all
right. Yeah, there was one part where, like, you sort of can walk either left or right, and you're supposed to walk to the right, but Marcus and I are both... fucking idiots and walked to the left for like 5 minutes without realizing that we weren't supposed to be walking that way. Then one of the
don't walk this way.
Yeah, or one of the press people was like, hey, you can walk the other way. We're like, ah, fuck. Walk the other way for another, not literally 5 minutes, but.
So it's definitely a game to watch. I'm curious to see how it comes out. All right, so let's see. What else do we do? Well, now let's talk about Rico.
This was probably one of Marcus's favorite games.
Well, it was fun. Ground Shatter makes it. The producer was James Parker. It was, I don't know. Tell me about the game, Nick.
Well, it was it's a procedurally generated shooter, first-person shooter, but it's co-op. The graphics were sort of similar to like a Take-Two game or maybe a Borderlands.
Yes.
And you have to clear a building of enemies. I think we have a great soundbite from James where he just says...
you're just killing people.
Yeah, it's shoot like stuff you shoot something. Men, kick in doors, it blow things up.
So it's like almost like a Rainbow Six Siege where you just kick in walls and you kill the enemies.
Yeah.
And it's randomly generated, so
it's different
one time you could
time.
Have 16 rooms and the next time you could have 50 rooms you have to break through
right
to beat the level. So... And every time you breach the door, it goes into a slow-mo segment like Max Payne was.
Yeah, Max Payne or like one of the Modern Warfare Call of Duty games and that breaching sequence yeah. where it's all slow-mo and then your gun's shooting. Like,
yeah. Dish, dish, so, dish, dish. I don't know when they... None of these games, I don't think they told us when they were coming out. This one I would probably buy.
Yeah,
just to be
fun.
Able to play with you for a little while.
Sure.
I had a lot of fun playing it.
So I'm James Parker from Ground Shatter, and we're making Rico, which is a action movie-themed co-op, randomly generated first-person shooter. You kick doors and you shoot men.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Then we had Trailblazers, another Ground Shatter game.
That was fun. That was a racing game where you paint your own team's color, like behind you on the track as you go along. And if you drive over your own team's color, it gives you a speed boost. But if you drive over the other team's color, it slows you down a little bit. So it's sort of a balance between painting your own color over the enemy's color or, you know, on fresh ground and just sticking to what's already yours to try and win the race. Because the ultimate goal is to win the race and paint the most color. Everything you do gets you points. It was just really fun to, like, get on and play and drive really fast.
It was a game that I could enjoy for minutes, not hours.
Yeah, I would
like,
say
I can't
so.
See myself sitting down and playing that game for hours. Even if all my friends were playing it,
yeah.
I don't foresee myself playing that for hours on end.
Yeah.
You know, if they, you know, I don't know how far they were in development. Like, the gameplay itself was great.
Everything was smooth.
I just think it was missing something. Maybe, you know... Let's go to, like, the Mario Kart Blue Shell.
Yeah, I was going to say, like some way to attack other players, maybe.
Right, or maybe, like, if you paint 60% of the map with your color at one point, all the cars blow up. And they, like, have to reset, and it gives the other team a head start.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the Blue Shell of Death.
Yeah, sure.
I'm all for it.
That's a great point.
Now, this by far was my favorite game at PAX, Wolverblade. If you played Castle Crashers... This was the fucking game for you. I mean, this is the game that I wanted to play again. And it was towards the end of the day that we found it. And I'm old. So I was kind of tired and my legs hurt. And they made us park a million miles away. So
right. We were tired from walking a little bit. But
Nick, give me the definition of the game.
It's technically a side-scrolling beat-em-up, I think. Is what is the technical term. where you play as
Vikings.
Kind of. Well, yeah, basically you play as like the native British people, or I don't remember the exact term, but it's native folk from the British Isles as the Romans are invading. So you're defending your homeland against the Romans in this 2D side-scrolling beat-em-up, and it's super fucking gory. Like, super. You're slashing heads off, intestines are flying out, blood everywhere. Marcus was some badass bitch just slicing people, and he could attack way faster than me, and I was some big, burly, Viking-looking dude, and I attacked slower but stronger or something. It was crazy, and they're just, like, slaughtering people everywhere. Kotaku had a pretty cool quote. It said, a brutal but irresistible brawler, and I agree with that 100%.
And it is available on Steam, and I'm going to tell you, if you're looking for a game to give you a few hours of enjoyment, like Castle Crashers did for me, this is a wicked fun game.
Yeah, I would definitely buy that on Steam.
Now, this may be the most fun I had in a game the whole time. It's called Candleman.
Candleman by Zodiac Interactive.
Yeah, so I met Kenny, who made the game, and we have an awesome soundbite from him. I'll play him. Play it at the end of this, and he was an awesome guy, and he kind of gave the backstory on it, but it's a platformer with an interesting fire-burning element. So basically, you play as a candle man.
Yeah, a little candle, and you gotta jump your way through these pages of books and stuff, and light other candles that are not non-sentient along the way. It's sort of like as checkpoints.
Yeah, so I didn't meet any enemies.
Yeah.
There was no enemies that we found or anything like that. We just did it was called Light 'em Up, I think the level was.
Yeah.
I think there's a demo on Steam, but I'm not really sure.
Right. It was a cool game. It looked really cool. It's sort of, if you've played Skyrim, or I think it's the Skyrim DLC, Dawnguard? No, that's not it. It's the other one. Well, I fucked that one up.
Well, no, it's not. I understand, because every game makes you think of another game.
Right.
But I can honestly tell you, it reminded me of nothing. Maybe like the darkness of a Castlevania game.
Yeah, it was really dark and gloomy. I'm trying to think of the one where you fight the other Dovahkiin in Skyrim. But there's a lot of books involved. It's really dark, like sort of greenish tints. And all the pages everywhere. It was a really similar aesthetic in Candleman to that sort of atmosphere.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a cool game. Nice little platformer. I'm not super into platformers. I think Marcus got a little bit more out of it than I did, but it was a really cool atmosphere to put a game in, for sure.
For sure.
Kenny from China.
And what's the name of the game?
The name is Candleman, The Complete Journey.
And what gave you inspiration for the game?
Okay, that's a little bit complex, because, you know, when I'm a child, I'm a great fan of Mario.
Yeah.
But when I grow old, I want to create something greater than Mario, but I find I can, because Nintendo is really, really great.
Yes, it is.
But I think I can have my way to create something about my own. So I create a little candle to adventure in some of the forests, the sea, river, or something else, and to find himself. You know, there's a lighthouse in the game. The lighthouse means the candle wants to grow stronger, taller, and finally become the lighthouse. But in the end, the candle finds that himself is the little candle, cannot be the lighthouse forever, but he can burn something by himself.
Yes.
This is what I want to say in the game.
Awesome.
Then we played Rite of Ilk, made by Turtleneck Studios and Elephant Ears.
So this game was a co-op only third-person 3D puzzle-solving platformer. That's a mouthful.
Say that 15 times fast.
Co-op, third-person, 3D, I fucked it up on the first try.
All right, next.
It involved a mechanic where you're tied to your partner. So Marcus and I's characters were tied together with a big rope. And then you can use the rope to sort of like knock things down to there between you. If you run on either side of something, you can knock it over. There's also a mechanic where you can teleport to the other player. but the other player has to accept the teleport request. So, like, if Marcus was able to jump up, or I can boost Marcus's character up on a ledge, but now I can't get up, I can teleport to him, but he has to accept it. So, like, you have to pay attention to where both people are at all times, pretty much. There's a cool water sequence where we're on a raft, and my dumbass fell off, like, four times, and I had to teleport back onto the raft where Marcus was, and Marcus had to keep accepting it. So, it was cool because it's co-op and you have to work with somebody, but that mechanic of having to actually accept the teleport really makes you focus on what you're doing and what your partner's doing.
Yeah, you absolutely do. And something else that I really enjoyed about this demo was you could die as many times as you wanted, but they gave everybody a time limit.
That was cool.
So, yeah. Like, we were at, you know, I guess he said we were at the end of the demo and we failed because we just figured out the puzzle. But what was nice is it timed out and, you know, because we died a few times, but we just kept going. We're like, well, how many times do we go? And then there was a timer on it. So it was actually kind of cool because you actually felt like, okay, I got a real demo.
Right.
Time's up. Let the guy standing behind us play.
Right.
That was a fun game. Graphics were great. He said, I asked him when it was coming out. He said at least a year.
Yeah.
See, I don't know anything about game development, so.
They must be just doing that like, all the just levels one and level. Stuff. Yeah. Or like that's like the intro sequence or something.
So then
favorite game.
Well,
oh, sorry. Were you continuing with Raid of Ilk?
No. You can talk about it cuz I love this game. It was the only AAA game we played at PAX.
Yeah. So the big Sony booth display on all PS4 Pros, crazy Sony noise canceling headphones, Sony giant 4K TVs. It was Detroit Become Human, published by Sony and developed by the makers of Heavy Rain. I forgot the development studio.
I don't know either.
But the same developing company that developed Heavy Rain, it was Detroit Become Human. So we played the demo. It was about probably 10 minutes or so, and by far the most visually stunning game I've ever seen. And granted, I don't have a 4K TV, so I'm not into that world, I guess. But the graphics were absolutely blew me away. You play as an Android detective in this particular demo. I know in the full version of the game, you play as several different Android characters, but the main component of the game is this butterfly effect type of decision-making. It's just really immersive, and it's something I really like. There's something similar in A Way Out that's also butterfly effect, or a horror game, Until Dawn, I think is the name of it, butterfly effects. I just really like games with that butterfly effect type of like branching pathways that you can take in a game.
Well, Heavy Rain was one of the best games I've ever played.
Yeah.
I actually have it for the PS3, but I don't know. Well, I do own a PS3. I'm actually looking at it right now, but I don't ever use it. And the PlayStation sucks. You should be able to play PlayStation 3s on the PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just saying. Xbox win there. So, but what I'm saying is, so it's the same style as Heavy Rain, but I think it's a little more intuitive with the controller because there were things where you just were, you know, hold the R1 instead of, you know, swooping the right stick all the way around in a circle, where in Heavy Rain it was a little tougher to play, but it was so immersive.
Yeah.
I remember playing that game and I couldn't stop playing it. When I stopped, I felt like I wanted to turn the system back on. I don't want to go to work. I want to play this game.
Yeah.
And that's how, you know, I'm glad that they're coming out with another game. That game, I know, comes out May 20th, and that's a game that I will be buying.
I will 100% be buying Detroit.
And if you buy the digital deluxe version of it...
Oh, this is my favorite part.
You get Heavy Rain in the updated 4K...
PS4 version.
PS4 version, and the graphics are stunning.
Yeah.
And I'm tempted.
I'm probably going to do that, because I never played Heavy Rain.
Well, I should say this. If I haven't looked into it, but if they give you Heavy Rain when you prepay for it, I'm all for it. If I have to wait until the game comes out to get Heavy Rain, why the fuck am I going to want to play Heavy Rain when there's the new game?
That's true.
So,
maybe if you get it, buy it on digital download or something, the deluxe edition, then you can immediately download the new Heavy Rain format.
Right.
And then... once, you know, Detroit Become Human gets released, you can download that.
So, the next two games were really for me. I was watching some, you know, new MMO games to come out in 2018. So, I was like, oh. So, then I saw Legends of Aria and then Pantheon, Rise of the Fallen. So Legends of Aria, they're saying, is going to be the Ultima Online successor. It was very fun, but it's really hard to get into it with a developer sitting next to you. And they were super awesome talking to me about the game, how I can build a house, I can make a fire, I can do all these things. And
you do make a shop at your house and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You don't even have to kill anything. You can just farm. It almost reminds me of like the original Star Wars Galaxies. I know some of my friends in my guild played that until they shut it down. But for me, it's really hard to get a taste of what an MMO is in 5 or 10 minutes at a gaming convention.
Right.
But they do have, Kickstarter programs and stuff because they're all crowdfunded. They aren't owned by anybody. So it's basically, we're funding the game. So if you buy a Founders Pack, I think you can get into the beta. And if you pay even more money, you can get into the alpha and kind of just help them build the game to get it to release.
I'm Derek Brinkman, project lead for Legends of Aria. We're building a crowdfunded MMO. We have no publishers or investors. So if you're definitely going to buy the game, we want you to buy the Founders Pack now because every Founders Pack we sell is an opportunity for us to make the game better. Thanks for checking it out.
Awesome. I do good?
Then Pantheon, Rise of the Fallen, which this one I'm really interested in. It's the same developer who I met. I don't know his name. He made EverQuest. It looked great. But the one fail, I think, that really bothered me was there was no playable demo. There was nothing I could do to put my hands on it and even just run around in a circle
right,
and just try it. And I feel like you're spending all this money to be at PAX East.
You have to have a booth, right?
Have something. Yeah. Even if it's just, hey, run around this town, interact with this person and go to the shop. Maybe kill a, I was going to say a dog, but I love dogs.
A wolf.
Or a deer.
There you go. Sure.
And slaughter it and then cook it and eat it.
Sure.
Just do something to show you. So I'm excited for that game, but you guys, I'm disappointed.
That you couldn't play it.
That I couldn't play it. But other than that, it was an awesome time. We'll have some more notes, I guess, as these games come out, and we'll watch for them and let you guys know. And
see if we can play them a little bit more.
Yeah.
All right. If we're done talking about games, let's get back to the podcast.
And we're back.
So today, we're going to talk with Brian about the current state of Star Wars The Old Republic. And what I mean by that is all of the things that maybe bother us that we want to change, and maybe a little speculation, and probably some questions from Nick to say, what the fuck are you guys talking about?
Just pepper those in as needed.
Exactly. Oh, he will. So, Brian, my opening question is, what do you think of the way BioWare is releasing content in Star Wars The Old Republic right now?
I have a love-hate relationship with kind of the development cycle, because I'm glad that we're getting one of everything, right? We get a new stronghold, we get a flashpoint, we get some PvP stuff, which is cool, but it's the pace that's really throwing me off, So if you're a PvP guy, you got your new map and a couple class balance things, and then you got to wait a year. Or if you're still waiting on a new playable race, well, it's been a while, So I like that they're touching all the major tent poles throughout the year, which I think is to their credit. We get a little bit of everything, but if you like one thing, you've got to wait for it for a while. So like I said, it's kind of a love-hate relationship right now. I like that they're doing stuff, but it's the pace of it, how they're slowly releasing it, is really a drag.
Well, see, I agree with you, but so the Flashpoint storylines I'm okay with, because they did that Shadow of Revan. In between it there was a bunch of preludes, the Flashpoints, which was fine. But I personally like the one boss at a time op. Now I haven't been doing ops for years because another ops player I play with, he's like, you got to understand, when we first came out, we were getting two at a time.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they stopped, and then they come back and give us one boss. And they were saying, every 6 to 8 weeks. And then it ends up being, 3 or 4 months between bosses. But I feel like we're getting something every month, every couple months. And I prefer that versus wait a year for a whole something.
Yeah, I agree. But again, it depends on what you like. So if you're not an ops guy and you're a PvP guy, you have to wait a year anyway. So that might as well just come in a big X pack with story and with class updates and a level change and all that stuff.
Right.
If you're an ops guy, you get your one boss every 3-4 months or whatever. But you don't care about the flashpoints. You don't care about the strongholds. So like I said, they're touching all the tent poles, but unless you like all the things in SWTOR, you're really having to wait to get what you want out of it.
I'm with you. I'm glad you brought up PvP, because we hear Chuck bitch and complain like a little fucking girl.
Oh man.
Well, I'm serious, right? Because he loves PvP, and that's what I get. So when I first started playing the game, I had you guys and, you know, the Teeny Cast to listen to. And then later I found Max and Seema. But the biggest thing is he, what's he bitch about? You know, PvP and the PvP gear. And I never really knew about it or anything, but then I started playing PvP. And if I go in with my tune, that's a 240 or 242 gear level, I'm getting my fucking ass kicked.
Right.
And there's no, and it takes forever, as we talked about earlier, to get through those command ranks to raise your gear level, Nick.
So I've heard you talk about your gear level before, and like new updates will raise the max gear level. And the max gear level is not 300, correct?
No.
It's like, what is it?
248.
It's 248?
Mm-hmm.
So you could be at 242 and you're still fucked?
Yes. Well, no. If you're in 248, you're even with all the top players.
Right.
But what I was saying is...
But you were 240 or 242 and you're right. Those 6 points are gigantic.
I guess so. I don't really understand it.
It equates to about, I don't know, probably 8% hit points and damage that you can do. You know, that gear disparity is probably like between 5 and 10%. More damage, more hit points, more defensives, et cetera, et cetera. So
that's substantial.
It's not insignificant for sure.
Yeah.
And when you're going against other players, especially the PvPers that know what the hell they're doing, that's a big difference.
Right.
Right. So, and then, you know, again, I came into PvP after they got rid of the PvP gear. So then when I hear Chuck or yourself or anybody talk about, you know, what was the stat?
It's called expertise.
Expertise gear. And I'm like, what the fuck is expertise gear? But now I get it, because people said, oh, if you PvP hard for 2 weeks, you can have max gear. And right. And it's over. So you put in 2 weeks worth of work. It's almost like playing your Call of Duties or your Rainbow Six Sieges, where you put in the work for a little while. Now you have the max gear, and now you're even par with all the best players.
Right. Right.
Where in the situation that we're in, I feel like,
There's no way to get the best PvP, PvE, or whatever gear in current system. There's no way to do it in 2 weeks. Like back in the day, yeah, you knew you were going to take your lumps, right? Yes. You knew you were the new guy just getting your gear, and that's fine. But you kind of suffer through it, and 2 weeks later, 3 weeks tops, you're ready to compete at an elite level. Now you have to put in months and months of time to get on par with the folks that do a hardcore.
Right. So when I play my Marauder, sure, I'm 248. I have a chance. So I'm playing that Bounty Hunter that I am level 70. And I want to say I'm, you know, 242, and the bolster brings you up. They basically bring you up to 242, but you still have no chance against some of these guys.
Right.
And go ahead.
And I'll be the first to say that, you know, a skilled PvPer will do better with garbage gear than me, say, who is terrible in best gear in the game. Like, I'm just not as good at it as a lot of other people. So you could give them a fucking bag of sticks and they'll kick my ass.
Sure.
But my excuse is always, well, it must be because my gear sucks. So I have that as a convenient excuse of why I always lose at this point, you know?
Well, it's a good excuse, but is it true?
No, it's not true. I could still be in best gear and still lose because I'm not that good at it. But
well, they were telling me, you know, so I was talking to some PvP guys, and there's a different rotation for PvP than there is for PvE. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And, you know, so they took me through the list, and I'm like,
wait a minute. Rotation? Oh, rotation through your moves?
Yes.
Like your attacks?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So if like me.
So this is the moment where Nick is saying, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. So, I think I get it, though. So if anybody doesn't know what the hell SWTOR is, your attacks are like on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and they're all different ones. So there's a rotate, and they all have longer cooldowns than others before you can press it again. So if I'm reading this correctly, Marcus has a specific order that you do it in, like 2, 7, 5, 3, 1, whatever. Because they cool down in different orders so that you get the max amount of damage in the smallest amount of time.
Correct.
And apparently you were just saying that there's a different order that you should do that, or rotation, in PvE, which are these ops, versus PvP, which is you're playing against other players trying to kill them.
Yeah, and the thing about PvP is it's all situational. So, you know, you're talking about how there's 20, 30 different abilities. I'd say you only use 8 in a PvE, you know, an operation versus Isaacs. You know, you're only going to do a couple things. But in PvP, it's so situational, you may use your knockback, your slow, you know, all these things that don't work or are pretty much useless against an ops boss, they have effect against other players. So you have to know the whole suite of abilities on your character and be able to use them situationally when it calls for it.
Oh, I see. I definitely see how that would be way more complicated.
He said that way better than I could.
Yeah, that was well articulated, sir.
I've thought about this before. It's like, really? Why am I so bad at this? Oh, yeah. Well, it's because I think too slow. Gummy power, man.
Hey, gummy power. That might actually be the name of our show.
Gummy power. Episode 10, gummy power.
Yeah. That might be it. You might have just given us the name. So I guess, in your opinion, should they bring back PvP gear?
They should. And it would solve a couple different problems. One is the gear disparity, like you're talking about. You as a PvE-er in adequate gear to do PvE stuff, you still get slain as soon as you step foot in the PvP arena. And it solves a problem for PvP-ers because they're not forced to go out and grind PvE or down ops bosses or get the new schematics out of a flashpoint. They're not forced to do other content that they don't want to do in order to get their gear. They can get their gear only by doing PvP, and it only applies in PvP situations. So I would love to see them bring back PvP exclusive gear. And I'd like for them to keep it back to the way it was, where, you know, 2-3 weeks of just grinding it out, doing your missions, and then you're ready to compete.
I agree. And the other thing for me now, I'd like to see them do it for a different reason. It's because of what they're going to do to the tanks in 5.9.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Well, I do story mode content. I just started doing hard mode stuff with my Thursday night team, which missed tonight. Sorry, guys. but it, how do I say it? It sucks because if it's a DPS race, so if you have 5 minutes to kill a boss and now the tank went from 1,000 DPS to 200 DPS because they're nerfing them because of what's happening in PvP, I think it's fucked up that the PvE players are going to suffer for it.
Yeah.
That's what bothers me.
And that's been a sticking point with SWTOR for a long time. You know, even when they had separate gear, they share the same skills. So you would have an ability or a combination that would be overpowered in PvP. So they would nerf it into the ground, and then all the people doing PvE stuff would be screwed because it's no longer effective where they needed it, because it was overpowered in one situation and now it's underpowered in both situations. So having, you know, they need separate gear, separate skill trees, or separate, you know, utilities behave differently. They need to be able to separate those two environments better.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense. I think it's a good idea. And please, for the love of God, BioWare, don't do it for me. Don't do it for Brian. Do it for Chuck.
Do it for Chuck.
Do it for Chuck. He would do it. So he can be, you know, on his podcast, you guys, he can be happy.
Right.
Because he gets his expertise back. Give it to him.
Dude, I swear, every week he's going to flip the table anytime he brings it up.
Well, so talking more into group content, how long have you been playing Operations?
I started Operations with when Oricon came out. So 2.4, that's, 2014 at some point, I think.
The Dread yeah. Palace, Dread
the
Fortress.
Dread Fortress, Dread Palace. That was my first foray into doing operations. So okay. it's been a little while.
Right. So you've been doing it for a while. Coming forward in the forward months, do you want to see them come out with another op in the same format as what they did for Gods for the Machine? Or would you rather them wait and then just drop one whole one at one time?
Well, there's a couple caveats there. How long is the wait? You know,
yeah.
Are we talking another, whatever it was, 2.5 years from Temple of Sacrifice to Gods and Machine? Or is it 6 months, a year? You know, ops is my thing, and I'm champing at the bit for any sort of new encounter that they'll put in front of me, for sure. So I was happy to get the one boss at a time laid out in front of us, because it had been so long since we got the last bosses. But going forward, I hope it's not that long of a wait. So I would say if it's going to take another year and a half to get a complete operation, I'll take one boss at a time. And right. if they can complete the whole thing in, you know, if we have a dead space of 8 months, a year, preferably less, then I want the whole thing done at once.
Yeah, I understand that completely. Go ahead.
Well, it's an uncomfortable situation to be in, because I love what they do. I just want more of it, you know?
So I haven't been in ops that long, so I don't mind the one boss at a time, because for me, who hasn't seen all of the fights over and over and over, by now I pretty much have seen them all at least a few times each, some more than others. But what I like is one boss at a time. You go there, you get your command points because you beat the operation, because it's one boss, two bosses, three bosses. And then you get to go see, you know, Dread Fortress. And, you know, even if you don't finish it, at least you got to see some of it, or go to a different op. So you were almost doing two a night. And I thought that was pretty nice.
Yeah, that's true.
So I want to see them just release it more. I shouldn't say more. I should say faster. And I don't know if they have the budget for it or not. And I don't know. I love it so much.
Right.
I just want, like you said, I want more of it.
Yeah. So this is where we're gonna split hairs here a little bit. So I've listened to your show.
Sure.
What's your proudest moment in doing operations?
Ooh.
The one where you kicked over the table and you woke up the dog.
Yes. What? You know, so that's hard, because Under Lurker and Isaac's are kind of meaningful, right?
Right. So I've been listening to your show. You killed Underlurker. And every time you bring it up, oh, we killed Underlurker, you're like, thanks, Dr. Swotor. Thanks, Daniel. You got me through Underlurker. And I'm fucking pissed, man, because who talked you through that shit? Who was leading that raid that you subbed in, motherfucker? Like, that was me, dick.
Well,
thanks, Dr. Swotor. Yeah, Daniel's a great dude. I love him. But like, thanks, Dr. Swotor. No, man, I fucking talked you through that shit. I was the reason you didn't win.
Well, let me. Whoa.
That was
so
awesome.
All right. So
called out.
Yes. First of all, it was it's his team. So when he guides me through it, whether he was the vocal part of that, I still thank him. So I can say thanks to you, but man, fucking cry me a river. There's seven other people in that room, and everybody's explaining shit to me because I've never done it before, and I died 276 fucking times, and or 75, and trying to beat that cocksucker, and I finally get there, and
you could have done it without me. Just go ahead and just admit
it. No. Know why? Because you were there. So I couldn't have done it without you, because 275 fucking times before that, I didn't do it. So either way, thanks, Dr. Sotor. And thanks, Brian, for walking me through it. Okay, proudest moment, though. So the Underlurker was just forever. It was a thorn in my ass, right? So jumping up and down, excited that we did it. Holy shit. Wow. And But believe it or not, my proudest moment was probably after that fight when I didn't give a shit what happened, right? I was just so happy we killed the Underlurker. We got demolished by these three bosses. and you know, I didn't care because I fucking killed the Underlurker that night. And I was being as greedy as possible because it's true. But that might have been my proudest moment because I was so high on killing the Underlurker. And then we just got our shit kicked in by those three other bosses. And then the next week we went in there and just, it was like easy as pie to beat that up. Where that's where, you know, I like the Gods from the Machine because each boss had its own challenge, but Isaacs is a bitch.
Yeah, for I real. Mean, I still have not cleared that one.
Well, we haven't. That Matt Pusevich guy, he wasn't kidding in that the SOTOR stream. He's the guy who made the op.
Yeah. Like,
he really did. He made that that boss to kill us. And, you know, Tio and Utini last week or the last time I was on or the time before, it was like, oh, you guys must be working on it in veteran mode. I'm like, fuck no, we're doing that shit in story mode and it sucks. And he kind of was like, oh. And I'm like, yeah, all right,
it's we're just rookies. Legit, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, Max and Seema said it perfectly this week on their show. They said, you get to a phase and it's 15 minutes into the fight and you all die. But now you got 15 fucking minutes to get back to that point you were at before. And then once you get past that, oh, next phase. Well, where do we go? All these bombs are going off. Oh, shit. There was an empty spot on the other side of the map. 17 minutes go by, start again. So do I like the fight? Yeah. Do I want to see a boss take that long? Well, I don't mind. But, I mean, it's a little long, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And that's – so let me ask you, that's clearly – you know, Pusevich is the mad genius. And that's an operation catering to the ops players.
Yes.
Because right? Every boss has some different unique mechanics and every boss, you know, he brings something new to the table and whatever. That's not a Dread Fortress where it's, you know, don't stand here and then kill the guys in this order. Or there's a lot to it. It's definitely designed for people that love operations. Now, if they're going to do another one, do you think they should take that same tack of making it for the people that he knows are going to do that content? Or do you think they should make it more like generally accessible and more friendly to pickup groups? Cause you can't pug Gods of the Machine. It's just going to end badly. Yes. So, but do you think going forward, they should keep that strategy or should they make something a little, you know, friendlier?
I think in my opinion, you know, I think about this all the time. Honestly, I think they should make a Dread Fortress style where you have your tank and spank, you have your DPS race, you have your standard bosses. Because just for that reason, I remember being a new ops player. If let's get Nick involved. If Nick downloaded SOTOR tomorrow, bought the Master's Compendium, was instantly level 70, and said, Nick, let's go to an op. We could never take him to Gods from the Machine.
No.
And I'm going to bring Temple of Sacrifice. I've done that so many times, but it's really, truly, we don't ever go there because the Underlurker's such a bitch.
Yeah.
And it's, I never saw the end of it.
So or scum and villainy, man. Like, I love ops, but that thing takes 3 damn hours.
Right.
You know?
That's what it brings me back to Gods from the Machine. You know, if your team, our teams run 2.5 hours, right? And if we're right at the end of EV or something and we know we're going to just destroy SOA, we'll go to 2 hours and 40 minutes or 2 hours and 45. But everybody's got jobs. Everybody goes to work the next day. So staying up until midnight, 1 o'clock is not an enjoyable time because 5 o'clock in the morning for me comes really early. So
5 a.m. comes early for everybody.
Yeah. 5 o'clock works too, dude. It sucks.
Well, for me, yeah, I don't know. My daughter wakes up at 5:30 every day. And yeah.
Shout out to my mom. She wakes up at 3:30 every day for work. Wow. She goes in for 5.
Brutal. Like,
fuck.
But she also gets out at 2.
That's pretty nice. Yeah, she does do that.
She still has her day.
Yeah, but she's so tired. She goes to bed at like 8. But still, 2 to 8, that's still 6 hours.
Yes.
Of shit you can
no
do.
Traffic? Hell yeah.
It's so true. Definitely no traffic going in, and coming out's fine too.
So to finish my thought is, nobody does Tadpole of Sacrifice because the Underlurker is a nightmare. Nobody wants to do it. So you go into Ops, or these Ops players go into it to be able to complete it to get the bonus at the end, whatever the rewards are. You want to feel accomplished. If you didn't want to feel accomplished, you would do hard mode. So you would progress through.
You want to feel like a failure.
Well, exactly. You know, you do a boss and you get through it. Oh, wow, we feel accomplished. The next week you do that boss, and then you go to the next boss and you progress through that. But in story mode, it should be enjoyable. And I don't feel like, you know, Gods from the Machine, it's enjoyable. And I love it because I'm an Ops player. But to a guy like Nick, he would be like, fuck this. This is not enjoyable. Nobody right. likes to lose.
At least not over and over and over and over.
And over. Yeah.
Right.
And wait a minute. And over. And over.
There's a steep learning curve, I'd imagine.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you the same question. What do you want out of it? Do you want the, I'm not going to say the word easy op, but we're going to go with the easy op or the ops player op?
I think Gods of the Machine is enough of a nod to the ops players that veteran mode is difficult, or hard mode is difficult enough, and even story mode shit is difficult enough to keep people engaged, to keep ops players engaged. Now, yeah, the most elite that cleared it on day one, yeah, they're going to be bored. But I would like to see an operation that's more just generally accessible. You know, when it comes up in Group Finder, you can put 8 randos together and it's going to be okay. When it comes up in, you know, somebody's forming a group in chat and you don't have a Discord or a voice chat, it's going to be okay. Right. I'd like to see something like that for the next one. I think they need to swing the pendulum back that way.
Oh, I'm with you. 100%. So that's going to bring us into 6.0. And I'd like to go off the rails. This is, some people say tinfoil hat. I say speculation, whatever it is.
I call it Crazy Town.
Yeah, Crazy Town. Perfect.
Crazy Town. We're going. Great.
All right. So, or if we were in Las Vegas, it would be Gummy Town.
Yeah, get on the Gummy Train. Get the Gummy Train to Crazy Town.
That's so, a good title, too. The Gummy Train to Crazy Town.
You better write it down because we won't forget it. We'll forget it.
I will write it.
So what do you want to see out of 6.0? And then what do you expect to get out of 6.0?
What I want to see, expertise come back. PvP gear, for sure. I want to see all the things that we've come to expect with an expansion, you know, level cap, story, some new abilities, stuff like that. But I want them to touch all those tent poles that I was talking about. You know, I want a stronghold. I want a playable species. I want an operation. I want some flashpoints. I want something for PvP, either a new map or some sort of new mechanic, expertise, or changing the way stuns work, or some shit for PvPers. I want all those tent poles to be touched. What do I expect? Level cap, new abilities, sure. Some story. And maybe a couple flashpoints. That's what I think is probably achievable at this point. You know, I have high hopes, but low expectations.
Yeah, well, wanting and what we get are always two different things. For me, I think we're going to get another kind of chapter-based story, because I think it's easier for them to make a chapter by chapter. In my opinion, for the story content, I think the flashpoints, they may give us one, but I think we get a full operation, and I think definitely we're going to get the expertise or some kind of PvP gear, because believe it or not, there's more PvP players than there are ops players. I didn't realize it until, you know, just talking to people saying that, you know, ops players are 2 or 3% of the game. And I'm like, what? Really? Because that's my whole world revolves around ops. But I, you know, everybody says the words maintenance mode. Well, I don't think we're there. No. I think we're still making money.
Yeah.
But 6.0 for me, I think this summer they're going to do some kind of event. I'm not saying the dark versus light event. So last year, Nick, last summer, they came out with this event called Dark versus Light, and they wanted everybody to do all eight class stories.
Oh, it's fucking brutal.
Overnight?
No, over the whole summer. They gave you 3 months or whatever the summer was, 3 months to do all eight class stories, every flashpoint, every single piece of content in the game.
Jesus.
And yeah, I think they're going to do something brutal. Like that.
Like, you had to do all the crafting skills. You had to do all the flashpoints. You had to do PvP, Starfighter. You had to do, all the eight classes up to level 50. It was
the ops, too, or no, is that different?
You had to do, it was something like 12 different operations bosses. So you'd kill the third boss in this operation, the first boss in that one, you know, the last boss in these two operations. So over the course of it, you ended up killing, I don't know, probably 20 or 30 ops bosses in total. It was just this monumental freaking task. You had to do this entire expansion and then that entire expansion. You know, it was fucking crazy town. And of course, because I'm a goddamn achievement whore, I did the whole fucking thing and I got my stupid reward.
Damn it. And then they took it from you.
Yeah. But then I got it back because I'm a fucking cried like a bitch over that one. The epilogue of that story for Nick is that, you know, everybody got all these achievements and they're tracked in game, right? And it's something you can look at. It's a little badge of honor. And then in just one random fucking update, everybody's got wiped out to zero.
Ooh. Like,
what the fuck, man? Like,
that's not cool.
That's not cool at all.
Like, yeah.
Like, everybody shat egg rolls, man. It was bad news. And we just raised it, hoot and holler. And then it's like, okay, well.
We'll put it back.
We'll put it back.
Good, good, good.
Awesome.
So.
Good.
So I have a question. So Marcus has told me about some kind of Twitter beef we got going on with the Bad Feeling podcast. And I don't obviously play SOTOR, so I don't really know the background here. I'm looking for a little insight.
Well, like I explained earlier, I got beef because, you know, Marcus gives all the credit to fucking Dr. SOTOR.
Oh, okay. All right.
Who says glowy arm and spiky arm? Me. That's my fucking term. But no, like, we were promoting y'all's show a couple weeks ago, and it's like, yeah, new podcast. And of course, Chuck, who's fucking grumpy, he's like, fuck those guys. Like, oh, okay. All right, podcast war on. Let's do this. Yeah.
Fuck those guys. Awesome. Okay, now I understand. Oh, yeah, I just wanted to clarify. That's
yeah,
all.
So expect your new kid on the block fucking hazing package to show up soon.
Yeah, of course.
It's fucking on the way. Yours will be delivered tomorrow by 5 p.m. USPS, if it fits, it ships. Well, all right, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
It's been great.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks, Brian.
Awesome. We'll talk soon. If all this sounds fun, come play with me and all my guildies on the Starforge server. We're in the AIE guild. You can find us at aie-guild.org or in-game, you can do a /cjoin AIELFO. That's the Looking for Officer channel. But if you go to the website, you can get our Discord information. That's probably the easiest way to get a nice guild invite. Come on and join us in MFN. And come kill some bosses.
What are you guys talking about in here?
Find out next episode of Working Class Nerds.